Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. 21-year-old Katie Erie of Franklin is a very fortunate person. She survived the January 12th earthquake in Haiti, which registered 7.0 on the Richter scale. Katie is majoring in social work at MTSU. She took a semester off to go to Haiti to work with the Brent Gambrell Ministries. And Katie is with us now via telephone. Thank you for taking time to be with us. How does it feel to be not only a survivor, but a media star all of a sudden?
Well, I definitely didn't expect it, but I guess if I can use this to get some help to the babies, then I guess I am okay with it.
Tell me where you were when the earthquake struck.
I was in, city-wise, I was in Kafu, which is the center of the epicenter where it happened. I was in a creche, which is basically an orphanage, for infants. I was on the third story of a five-story building.
And what did you sense? Did it start out as a minor rumble, or was it full force immediately?
It was. I was on like a deck type area that was covered and barred so the children couldn't get out. And I was the ground is not the roads are not made like ours in America. So when trucks pass by, it kind of shakes a little bit anyways. And at first, I kind of thought that a truck had hit the building because it started shaking pretty badly. It was full force, I would definitely say. And so that's kind of what I thought. But as time progressed and it lasted longer, I was like, I'm pretty sure that this is something big.
Yeah, you'd never experienced anything quite like that before.
No, definitely not. I have never been in an earthquake or anything like it, so I was not really sure what was going on or how significant it was. I did figure out by the end of the quake that it was, in fact, an earthquake, but I really didn't know what that meant as far as the how bad it was.
What did you do and what did the kids do? Did the kids start crying?
Some of them, yes. A lot of them had a panic sense on their face of what is going on. I was in on the little deck area. There was the other worker that was working on that floor with me. And there was about four children. And they, like any child, gravitated towards me and her in the beginning. And I just got them against the wall and sat down because I didn't want them to fall over.
Were there any other adults with you and the kids at the time?
At the time, no. It was just us two on that floor.
So just two of you to try to round up some 50.
There were 10 children on our floor.
Okay, there were 10 kids. I've been given to understand that there were more than 50 kids total in the orphanage. Is
there
that right?
48 children in the building with us and 12 workers.
Now, when it was all over, when the tremor, even of a large magnitude, only lasts a matter of seconds, what did you do when everything finally stopped shaking?
I immediately went into where the rest of the kids. I knew that a lot of them were in the back bedroom, or the bedroom that they sleep in. So I went down the hallway to see where they were, to make sure that everyone was okay, that no one was hurt. And after I did that, I went back to where I was originally and looked outside to see what was going on in the street. And the other ladies that were working there were screaming from the street that we needed to get out of the building.
Was anyone in the building injured?
There was one lady who had minor cut on her leg. But that was it.
How much damage was done to the orphanage?
It is a significant amount of damage. It did not fall. I don't know if there's a possibility that it has fallen because there have been some more aftershocks won the not too long ago after it was over, a few days after the 6.0 aftershock, that could have possibly made it fall. It was not structurally safe. The first and second floor have had compressed significantly, making it unsafe for anyone to be in.
And no, you're not an architect or a building inspector or anything like that, but would you say the building is basically a total loss?
Absolutely, yes. I know it is. Just I know the way that the buildings are made there with the rebar structure, and the rebar was not safe. There were huge cracks, and you could visually see how the structure was bent, and it was going to fall. Like, I know it will fall eventually.
Well, since the children were orphans to begin with, how are they being housed and taken care of right now, or were they transported to a secure location? Did any of them just get out and start running around on the streets?
No. We kept all the children together. My father and his coworker Brent Gambrell of Brent Gambrell Ministries, they came to get us whenever they heard of the quake. They took the 48 children, and we took them up to a house. It was a guest house that the director had up on a mountain, which is significantly safer for them, and that's where they are now. A few days after the quake, I came back on the Saturday after the quake, and I guess on the following Wednesday, Brent and a small team went back to get them, the remainder of the children. My dad brought back my sister on Tuesday, the 1 week after he brought her back, because they were adopting, my parents were, and they have been doing their best to get the kids back.
So some of the children had to stay in the destroyed orphanage until
we stayed across the street. There was a church that was being built. It was just the cement foundation and a few of the structured bars that would hold the ceiling. We stayed out there. The quake happened on Tuesday, and we stayed there until Thursday night or Thursday afternoon whenever my dad and Brent arrived.
So the kids were sort of taken up to the mountain location in two separate shifts?
No, we rented a bus and they all went together.
Okay. And were Brent and your father already on the island, or did they come from the United
States? Thanks to a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful friend of the ministry, he donated the money and a private jet to fly them in, because all commercial airlines have and were and had been canceled. So they were not able to get in commercially. The only way to get in is through private.
And they knew that they would be able to land at the airport at Port-au-Prince?
No, actually, whenever they were flying over, the pilot had some military background or refugee evacuee type thing experience, and they told him on the radio that he could not land the plane, and he told them that they needed a clear path because he was either going to land the plane or wreck the plane to land it. So, no, they did not want to let them in, but forcefully they were able to land anyways.
So your father and Mr. Gambrell did not know, coming from the United States, even what condition the airport would be in, whether the tarmac was all torn up, whether the tower had fallen down, whether the whole airport was in a shambles.
Exactly. And at that point, they didn't even know if I was alive. They said to me once they got there, we were preparing to come there to get your body because we did not think that you were alive.
You have a cell phone, and does cell phone service work internationally between Haiti and the U.S.?
Yes, it does. The only service that works between Haiti and the U.S. is AT&T, and I bought, I had an iPhone, and praise God for the iPhone, because if not, I would not have been able to communicate with them. I had the phone there the night of the quake, all, I guess, just from overactivity. The major cell phone carrier in Haiti is called Digicel. That building was wiped out, so all Digicel was not working, and I still don't think to this day that it's working. The other cell phone company is a company named Voila, which is why I say thank you to the iPhone, because I could switch carriers from Digicel to Voila. The first night, none of them were working, so they asked us to all turn off our cell phones to see if that would help with the overuse, and maybe it would be able to get it back running rather quickly. So the next morning, I was actually able to get a hold of them once I turned my phone on, which should not have happened.
When you were able to emerge from the wreckage of the orphanage, describe the scene. What did you see?
I'm sure many viewers have, many people here in the U.S. have seen the coverage, because I don't know that you can not hear about it or see it somewhere.
Sure.
But the pictures and the videos do give it, have no justice to the catastrophe that had happened and the sights that I saw. I hate to be graphic, but a lot of it is piles and piles of bodies on the sides of the roads. There are thousands of people who died, and it's just they don't even have anywhere to put the bodies. There's so many. Right behind us, there was a school that had over 400 children in it that died instantly because the building collapsed. And as we were taking the children out, there were 8 dump trucks that went by us that were just like dump trucks we have here, that were overflowing with bodies.
How were the survivors behaving? Were they stunned, crying, running?
I think that's one of the things that I'll never get out of my head, and it was almost shocking, too. From the minute it happened, the only thing the people of Haiti did and the only way they were reacting were to rejoice and sing praises to God that he had spared their lives. I thought it was amazing, and what a great test of faith to see people who have just everything that they know has just been taken away from them. And whereas I would say in America, we would have a tendency to be angry or to start questioning and start going into this mode of, well, I have nothing, what am I going to do now? They got on their faces before God and thanked them for the things that they still had, like their lives, and some of them their families.
Did any of them start digging through the rubble to try to get their loved ones out with their bare hands?
Yes, absolutely. It was another thing that I thought was amazing, and I'm almost envious of the people, is their sense of community and their sense of helping one another. They love each other. They're in a country where they have nothing. If they were given something like food, for instance, they would take some and give it to someone else who wasn't, who had nothing. Which you don't see that here in America as much. We tend to be more of a greedy type environment where we're worried about ourselves.
More materialistic.
Just as much worried about everyone else.
More materialistic.
Absolutely, and they definitely don't have that materialistic attitude.
Being the poorest, most poverty stricken nation in the Western Hemisphere, and having had governmental administrations that they could not rely on, would it be fair to say they've developed this sense of not only self-reliance but also interdependence? They realize that there must be a brotherhood.
Absolutely. I think that they definitely have. And that's also, I think that also has hurt them in this sense, as far as being the poorest country. Other countries could maybe handle this a little bit better. But I think one of the hardest things for the Haitian people to understand right now is they've always had to deal with being poor, and this is every day. Yes, a catastrophe or a natural disaster has just happened, but they don't understand the significance of how bad it is and how the food is running out and how they have nothing, because that's every day. So it's almost a just uneducated sense of they just don't realize how bad it really is.
But we have now heard some reports of disorder, of looting is to be expected when you're hungry and thirsty, but we've also heard reports of a large prison break in which four prison guards were shot, and hardened criminals are now on the streets competing with the decent law-abiding citizens for whatever little sustenance that they can. Does this make you fearful for the citizens, and do you think that the orphans are safe up on the mountain retreat?
Yes and no. I mean, I think that the orphans are the orphans that we have. Yes, they are safe. We took them to that location very specifically, so they would be safe. I have heard other reports of some places that aren't safe, because they know that they're going to bring food to the orphanages because there are children there and they can't fight for their own food. So yes, that is true that some of them are not safe, but we're working on that.
When did you make it back to the United States?
I came back, the earthquake happened on Tuesday, and I came back Saturday.
Had any NGOs gotten there with any kind of relief supplies before you were able to leave the island of Hispaniola?
We had a team of people who were able to get some supplies the following Wednesday, week after. They brought supplies and medical supplies for the children.
How has Brent Gambrell Ministries itself been able to cope with this in terms of its ability to continue with its mission and what it tries to do for the people of Haiti?
I'll have to say that we as a ministry have taken on a whole new aspect that we never thought we would be a part of. So many people that I'm eternally grateful for have stepped up to the plate and offered services such as planes to get these orphans out, which is the hugest thing, because right now there are no commercial flights out, and just several different things of that nature, planes and funds. Right now we have we set up a Haiti relief fund at all region banks. And we also have a donation center that people have been pouring gracious donations to help the long-term effect of these people.
Is there a website or contact information you'd like to give?
Absolutely. I will give you the website. The website is www.brentgambrell.com, and I'll spell that. That's B-R-E-N-T. Gambrell.
And since we're on the radio, we're going to let that be one-stop shopping for all of the listeners' needs for information, because it's sometimes difficult when you're listening to the radio in the car to write down phone numbers and such.
Absolutely.
But we will repeat that website address before the conclusion of the broadcast.
Right.
You're a social work major, and you took a semester off to go down to Haiti to do this ministry work.
Yes, ma'am.
Tell me how this experience has informed your educational experience and the degree track that you're on. I know we're going from the humanitarian to the interpersonal right now,
okay.
But if you would, tell me how that experience has propelled or informed your education, your college education.
Okay. Well, I had, once I decided to go into the realm of social work, I knew that I wanted to work in the adoption setting, work with orphanages or foster care. So I, whenever this opportunity presented itself, I immediately wanted to know if I could get credit for it. I was unable to do that, and it almost stopped me from going, but I decided, you know what, even though I'm taking a semester off and it's going to put me a semester back, this is definitely a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and I don't need to give it up because these things just don't come by every day. So I need to be willing to take that one semester and go with it. So going there and having seen what I've seen and experienced what I've gone through, it just makes me even more eager to finish school and get and be able to get into a place where I can help people even more with the education that I will have built on from the university standpoint, as well as the experience education.
When you get your degree, what do you want to do next? Do you want to go to graduate school and get a master's or a PhD, or do you want to go immediately to some location on the globe where you feel you can be helpful?
I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. There is that part of me that would say absolutely I'll go to grad school and go on, but I don't know where God has me going right now, so who knows? I am more than willing to do either one.
Something tells me God wouldn't mind if you just took a little bit of a rest right now.
Yeah, I'm sure he wouldn't, but there is still tons of work to be done, and I feel like God placed a call on my life to orchestrate that care for them. So I'm gonna execute that in any way, shape, or form.
Have you had any communication with any of your MTSU professors?
Since I've been back, no, I have not.
Or anyone in the MTSU community at all?
No, I have not.
Okay, just getting your personal life settled down.
On every news station possible, and I definitely didn't expect that. So I am just trying to take it one step at a time, and I would love to talk with anyone at MTSU and share with them any and all aspects of my trip and my experience.
I was wondering perhaps if there might be something that could come from the experience for you that could count as college credit, that you could write
know.
A paper or something.
I'm willing to find that one out. That would be great as far as I'm concerned. So,
did anyone tell you before you went to Haiti that there was an unstable fault or anything about the plate tectonics of the Caribbean region, anything about the possibility of an earthquake, that it might even be a remote possibility?
Nope. I had no idea that anything could have possibly happened. So, no, I did not know anything about the possibility of an earthquake. So, but I can't say that would have stopped me from going if I had known.
But you, as far as knowing how poverty-stricken the country was, you weren't in culture shock about that because you'd done your research,
right?
And everything.
Yeah, this was not the first time that I had been to Haiti, so I did know what I was getting into before I went, even outside, or obviously I didn't know about the earthquake, but or what that would bring, but yes, I did know about the country and its culture. And
would you go back if you could, and when do you think you'll be able to go back?
Yes, absolutely. I will go back. They were planning a trip last week to go on Wednesday, whenever the team that went to go get the children, and I was supposed to go there, and I don't know if they decided that maybe it was best that I didn't go right now or what happened there, but it's okay. But yes, I will be back as soon as I possibly can. Like I said, I want to get these children taken care of, and there's lots of work that needs to be done there. So yes, I will, will be. I don't really know when. We haven't really figured out timelines of when I'll be going back or anyone will be going back. But yes, we will be a part of the rebuilding process for sure.
Some people would look at an experience like an earthquake, which the insurance moguls like to call an act of God for legal purposes, and say, why would God let this happen? In other words, it shakes not only the ground, but it shakes their faith.
Right.
And for some people, it only makes their faith stronger.
Right.
I have a good feeling which it is for you, but I'd like to hear you put it in your own words.
Absolutely. The best way I can describe it is if it would have happened, I would say even 2 or 3 days earlier, I probably would not have responded to this question the same way. Being in Haiti was very difficult, not just the earthquake, even prior to the earthquake. And it was a time of breaking me, and God was using me in other ways of my life, mentally and spiritually. I was going to a new place that I had never been at with God, and it was very difficult, and I wanted to leave. There were times where I wanted, that I said, if someone were here to get me, I would leave, because it was just with the language barrier and the not having anyone there that I knew. There was one person in the building with me that spoke English, but even that, it was very broken English, and it wasn't a thing where we could communicate like I'm communicating with you now. It was very simple sentences, and even those simple sentences I had to rephrase and restructure so he could understand what I was saying. So it was just very hard. And I would say 2 days prior, I came to the grips where, God, I'm putting my full trust in you. I'm putting my full dependence on you. And that's very hard coming from a very independent person who by nature does things for herself, and I'm a fixer, and I that's just who I am by nature, and I have no doubt in my mind that God put me through the week and a half before the earthquake to be where I was when the earthquake happened, where in the midst of chaos and a situation that should have been very scary, I was at ultimate peace because I knew that God had orchestrated that time for me to be there right then.
Katy Erie is 21 years old. She is from Franklin, Tennessee. She is an MTSU student, a social work major, a lay minister, if you will, and a survivor, and a quite extraordinary person. If you would like to contribute to Haitian relief efforts through Brent Gambrell Ministries, go to www.brentgambrell.com. That's www.brentgambrell.com, and follow the instructions from that point. Katy?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. We
are grateful you are alive and well to tell this tale.
Yes, thank you so much.
And to continue your work and your education.
Yes.
This is MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Loeb. Please join us again at this same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can check out the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com. And we're available on iTunes.